Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019. Juba residents weigh in on whether the November deadline should be met on a unity government.
What we need from them is just to concentrate on the peace process and form for us the unity government or what, but me, for myself, I need peace. I'm tired of war.
And Sudanese rebel groups sign a declaration of commitment in Juba with the Sovereign Council.
We have realized that only sitting down to negotiate can solve the problem and not the barrel of the gun.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some Juba residents say they want the principles of the two main parties that signed the revitalized peace deal, namely President Salva Kiir and SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar, to do all they can to form a unity government by the November 12th deadline. Machar told a visiting delegation of the UN Security Council this week it would not be possible to form a unity government by that deadline. Onen Solomon reports for VOA from Juba.
50-year-old Asante Kiden, a resident of Juba's Gudele suburb, says the 2018 peace deal is South Sudan's only hope for lasting peace. Speaking in Arabic, Kiden says she is disappointed that by failing to resolve the outstanding issues ahead of forming a unity government, both President Kiir and Machar are dishonoring their commitment to form a government of national unity and restore peace and stability across the country.
Who do they expect to come from outside to address for them this problem? This is already a sovereign state. They are now able to resolve the issue related to security. So, what has gone wrong again? They are the cause of the insecurity here. If they choose to compromise, they can change this situation for better.
The parties blame the slow pace of implementing the pre-transitional activities on a shortage of funds. Article 1, Section 4, Subsection 8 of the Revitalized Peace Agreement stipulates that there shall be established a fund to be drawn from the government funds and contributions of donors for the implementation of the activities of the pre-transitional period. So far, the government has provided only $42 million out of the $100 million it pledged to fund pre-transitional tasks. 35-year-old Juba resident Madut Mayara wants the government to honor its pledge and provide the funds to complete the pre-transitional activities.
Government has to try its best because it's the government, and those who are dying are the citizens of the government.
32-year-old Annette Juru sells clothes at the customs market in Juba. Juru says she doesn't care about arguments over the Kiir administration's failure to provide funds to implement pre-transitional activities or Machar's concerns over unresolved security arrangements. Juru says she wants the signatories to the peace deal to restore peace across the country and do it quickly.
What we need from them is just to concentrate on the peace process and form for us the unity government or what, but me, for myself, I need peace. I'm tired of war.
Joy Gire, who is in her 50s, says her son was killed during the fighting, but she has yet to see justice. Speaking in Arabic, Gire says Kiir and Machar should work together to sensitize some of their rock followers to understand the terms of the revitalized peace deal and prevent further conflict.
If people have truly forgiven, let them do it wholeheartedly without lying. But these children cause us to die of hunger, diseases, gunshot, trauma, and we are dying of many things. At this old age, we can still be good advisors to them. This is not how a country is governed.
Tek Chan, an IDP from Bentiu, from former Unity State, who now resides in a UN-run protection of civilians site in Juba, says his dream of returning home has been shattered by both leaders' failure to implement and resolve pre-transitional activities, and he worries that a cycle of violence will return to the country if security arrangements are not fully implemented.
We as IDPs have witnessed what happened in Juba. When our parents, families, relatives were massacred in 2016, when the peace was signed in 2015 without good security arrangements, the fighting broke out and we were killed again. We don't want to witness the same thing. So we need security arrangements to be resolved, civilian towns to be demilitarized, and the South Sudan army need to be united.
An army, Chan says, that is not manipulated by individuals or by any party. He says the UN Security Council should look beyond the deadline for forming a unity government and ensure that all outstanding issues are resolved so the country does not slide back into war. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
In our story yesterday on Riek Machar's comments regarding the formation of the unity government, we misconstrued the comments of Deng Alor, a member of the former detainees. Here's what Alor said.
Because President Sarkozy cannot solve these problems alone, even if he decides to form the government, or even if he decides to go ahead with the current government, which is only when all of us are in this government, new government we have, which we must form, then we will see what is wrong with the security mechanisms. Where is this money which was promised? The money from the oil fields that we have mentioned? Why is this country suffering and we are an oil-producing country? Where is this money going to? It is only when all of us are involved that we will be able to address the issues that we will be.
That was Deng Alor, a member of the former detainees. Analysts in Juba have mixed views about forming a unity government by the November deadline. While some say a unity government should be formed soon, others have a more nuanced response, saying any decision to delay its formation should only be made after careful consideration about the ramifications of such a decision. Winnie Torino has more for VOA from Juba.
Abraham Kwalnyon, an associate professor of politics, peace and security at the University of Juba, says the urging of the United Nations Security Council to form a unity government by November 12th is a positive step forward. However, he says given that other pre-transitional tasks, including security arrangements, are yet to be implemented, the forming of a unity government must be handled carefully so it does not lead to another war.
South Sudan is at the movement at the critical juncture. This is a serious movement that should be observed critically, because this movement could either lead to the eruption of conflict at larger scales, or it could lead to the transformation of the conflict at large. And this means that all the coming of the United Nations Security Council to Juba is something that should be welcomed, is a welcome move. It shows to the citizens of South Sudan that the international community, the world at large, is having concern and have the people of South Sudan at heart.
Nguyen says neither the international community or the South Sudanese people want any more extensions of the pre-transitional period. He says forming the government by November 12th is a way of building trust, confidence and reconciliation among the warring leaders. Nguyen says Machar's comment that he would not be part of any government by November 12th could not exactly mean that he is opting out of the formation of the government. He says it could mean that Machar is trying to force the government and the international community to listen to his demands. Nguyen recommends that Machar forward his name for appointment by President Kiir and perhaps delay his swearing in as first vice president as a way to reach a compromise among the parties.
The fact that Riek said if the government is formed, the cessation of hostility that has seemed to be holding for the last 1 year will not hold any longer, that is a white lie. Because the fact remains that if the government is not formed, in fact, this is what may bring the problem. Because the people of South Sudan, all eyes are set on 12 November 2019. And if there is anything that is going to change that, it should come as a united voice from the principal signatories.
James Okuk, a senior research fellow and political analyst at the Juba-based Center for Strategic Policy Studies, says it is difficult to form a government by November 12th because the reality on the ground does not match what is written in the text of the peace agreement.
It is good that they have pledged, particularly the incumbent Tigono, which has the top responsibility of financing the activities of the security sector, the security mechanism, and also of financing the activities of governance in Chapter 1. So that support has been commended, but it has to be translated into real action on the ground.
Okuk says if the Kiir administration moves and forms the transitional government by November 12th without all signatories, then it will become an illegitimate government because it will have violated the revitalized agreement. He says some countries, including the United States, has made it clear that a government formed not on the basis of the agreement will not be recognized by the U.S. and its legitimacy will always be questioned.
It will not be a government of national unity if it is formed by that. The worst, it will not be a revitalized government, because a revitalized government should be a government of peacetime, not a government of wartime. So if they go ahead without inclusivity, and without involving the parties that signed the agreement, it will not be a complete government.
Okuk urges the parties to do the right thing by forming the government in accordance to the provisions of the agreement, or sit together and amend articles that they all feel are difficult to implement, and reach a consensus on a new agreement, and always communicate with international and regional bodies. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The Sudanese Sovereign Council and the Sudan Revolutionary Front, or SRF, an umbrella group of at least 10 armed groups operating in Sudan, signed a political declaration in Juba yesterday and renewed their commitment to a cessation of hostilities agreement. Viola Elias has the details for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan President Salva Kiir, who mediated the talks, says the two documents signed yesterday will open the doors to lasting peace in neighboring Sudan.
We have realized that only sitting down to negotiate can solve the problem and not the barrel of the gun. I believe we will all come out with all possible successes. I thank you all for coming this morning, and I congratulate the Sudanese parties for the breakthrough they have made.
President Kiir says Sudan used to be respected internationally until it fell into the wrong hands. He encouraged Sudan-warring parties to resolve the country's crisis so that the Sudanese people can concentrate on development. The parties agreed to negotiate all issues related to Sudanese crisis, including areas of armed conflict, national issues and privacy issues, and to establish mechanism to activate the work of joint committees to follow up on the release of prisoners, humanitarian issues, and peace arrangements. This marks the first time rebel groups in Sudan have reached a deal with Sudan Sovereign Council in talks that got underway in Juba last Monday. Hedi Idris Yahya, president of Sudan Revolutionary Front, signed the documents on behalf of his group. Some of the rebel groups affiliated to Sudan Revolutionary Front includes Sudan Liberation Movement, SLM, led by Abdul Wahid al-Nur, Sudan Liberation Movement, led by Al-Tahir Hagar Hajju, Justice and Equality Movement, JEM, led by Jibril Ibrahim, and SPLM North, led by Malik Agar. Idris says yesterday's action paved the way for more negotiation between Khartoum and the armed opposition in Sudan. Yahya says efforts to transform Sudan, which began last December in street protest over price hikes and deteriorating economy, will not be real without peace.
I want to assure you that SRF is so serious and determined to help and to support efforts to make sure that peace and stability is coming very, very, very soon. For us in SRF, peace is a very strategic goal for us.
Military officials and Sovereign Council member Muhammad Daglo, also known as Himeti, signed the documents on behalf of Sudanese government. Speaking in Arabic, Daglo says the political declaration is a step towards a comprehensive and final peace agreement in Sudan.
We have acknowledged that there is a will which was brought in during the December revolution. So, God's willing, and for interest of our people, we are going to bring a comprehensive peace that will pave way for the foundation of our nation based on the truth.
The documents at the presidential palace, known as J1, with President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar looking on. Kiir initiated talks between the council and the various rebel groups after military ouster of long-term Sudan President Omar al-Bashir. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. After the break, find out what one member of the diaspora is doing to handle the life-work balance. Stay tuned.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there anything you completed simply because you were told you couldn't?
Actually, in my life, all my plans, they are all going on well. There's nothing which has defeated me, and people can say, for you, you are just doing this one, you cannot manage. Actually, I've not gone through that experience.
Yeah, actually, there is. When I was in secondary school, people were telling me that I should not take science section. They said that I cannot make it. So I decided to take it, and I did it. I did science section, and it was very okay.
Yes, actually, when I started my primary school, some of my friends were telling me that I will never get number one. But because I see it was a challenge, but I try my level best. After all, I was number one.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday segment, our Tuesday health segment. And today we're talking about universal health care in South Africa. South Africa's parliament debates the National Health Insurance Bill this month, a plan for universal health care that proponents say will bring justice and equality to the health care system in this deeply unequal country. But critics say the plan is too ambitious, and they doubt the government, which repeatedly has been accused of corruption in other public sector projects, can do it honestly. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa is one of the most unequal societies in the world. According to the government, only 15% of South Africans have health insurance. The rest falls to the nation's overburdened public health care system. But the government is debating a bill to provide universal coverage, an ambitious plan that they've tested at several public hospitals already. Public hearings begin later this month for the National Health Insurance Bill. Dr. Bundile Masuku, an official in the nation's most populous province, Gauteng, says a national health scheme, in the spirit of Britain's NHS, is a moral necessity.
In a country like South Africa, we are a country of democracy that has to look after the vulnerable. And the universal health coverage is one way that we're going to do it.
Critics point to the government's track record of corruption and mismanagement and say the plan is too ambitious, too expensive, and too vague. Johan Serfontein is an analyst at the health division of the Free Market Foundation.
We've been at it for 10 years. We don't have enough clarity on how we want to do things now. To think that in the next 7 years, you're suddenly going to miraculously have that clarity, you know, it's just not a realistic proposal.
But for the chronic care patients like 25-year-old Kanyisa Ntombini, anything is better than the current system. She's had numerous surgeries in public hospitals for her ailments, which include blindness. And she says public hospitals need all the help they can get so the country can develop.
As a country, we will never be able to improve because we have this huge number of people who are unproductive and will forever be sick. So we need the NHI to implement it so that we have more funding in rural hospitals and township hospitals so that people's health can improve.
Dombini says she's willing to subsidize the system.
I think quality health care, like food, like shelter, is something that everybody deserves to have. You know, and for me, I would be more than willing to contribute to ensuring that everybody has a quality health care.
If the bill passes, the system would be implemented by 2026. By then, Dombini would probably be working as an engineer, earning too much to qualify for public health care. And that, she says, is the point. This plan, she says, is for the next generation of South Africans. Anita Paul, VOA News, Pretoria.
Protesters marched in Khartoum and other Sudanese cities yesterday to mark the October 1964 uprising that ended a dictatorship. The marchers have, however, focused on the present and made demands that stem from the recent ouster of former leader Omar al-Bashir. Naba Mohyeddin reports for VOA.
Thousands of Sudanese rallied Monday to mark the October 21st revolution that ended the rule of Ibrahim Aboud in 1964. They used the occasion to demand an independent investigation into the June 3rd massacre, when dozens of people were killed as military forces cleared pro-democracy protesters away from the defense ministry in Khartoum. Monday's demonstrations were backed by the Sudanese Professionals Association, which organized the protest that swept Omar al-Bashir from power earlier this year, but they were initially organized by neighborhood committees and the families of the June 3rd victims. Crying and holding a Sudanese flag, protester Nagla Mohammed said she is pessimistic the current military-civilian ruling council will get justice for the victims. People took to the streets because they are still so angry, she says. Justice for victims isn't sustained. We reject any kind of military representation in the new transitional government. It's a total rejection, she says. And we also call for justice for the victims, as they were sacrificed for Sudan and nothing has changed. The dissolution of the National Sudanese Congress Party was another one of the protesters' demands. The party supported Bashir for decades. The Freedom and Change Alliance published a communique asking the protesters to drop the idea, warning that chaos could erupt if Bashir supporters attacked the protests. Protesters Ahmed Nasir says Bashir, who is facing corruption charges, needs to be punished for his dictatorial 30-year rule. This protester, Ahmed Nasir, says yes, they have a civilian government they demanded, and he's optimistic of the positive change will happen in Sudan. But for now, none of our other demands has happened yet. He's angry that Bashir is being prosecuted for money charges. He says Bashir should be tried under the constitution for the military coup he led. Ahead of the march in Khartoum, Sudan's military published a communique warning protesters and citizens not to get close to the army headquarters and military facilities. Troops spread across the capital to protect strategic locations. Sudan erupted in mass protests in December 2018 over high bread prices, but the demonstrations quickly morphed into calls for Omar al-Bashir to step down. Power-sharing agreement between the generals who ousted al-Bashir and protest leaders was signed in August to end 8 months of turmoil and lead the country until elections are held in 2022. Naba Mohyeddin for VOA News, Khartoum.
Working mothers face many challenges in North America and everywhere around the world. One South Sudanese who immigrated to Canada more than 10 years ago says she juggles her time wisely to avoid conflict in her family. Stella Minga says she creates time for work, children, and other activities.
You know, for me, I have to be a role model, especially that I have a family and I have girls. I have to be a role model for them because that was what my mom was for me. And I wanted to follow on her footsteps. Because without me doing that, I'm sure that they won't find proper guidance in future.
Yeah, talk to me about challenges of parenting here in the West. I mean, you just say your mom brought you in a certain way, and she was your role model. What are some of the challenges of parenting here?
It's tough. right? Being a parent, especially of four children, you find that each and everyone has their own unique characteristics and their own needs. There are certainly a lot of challenges here, but at the end of the day, as a parent, you also have to recognize that we are not here to control the children. They are growing up to be their own individual people in one way or the other. So we have to respect that and nurture that.
But what are your battles? Mm-hmm. What are your battles with your daughters? What are the things that you disagree with them, that they don't like you telling them or you don't like them doing?
Certainly that they're growing up. I would just like them to be independent, respectful, and hopefully follow like certain tradition that I want to install in them. Like, for example, something that I won't let them want to do, or if they ask me, is like, for example, going out with different friends. That's something that I usually tell them. I'm like, it's not like today you have a friend and then you want to go out on a play date. I have to get to know their parents, to know where they live, to know where they work first before we can jump into the step of you going out or going to the park with them, because of safety issue and a lot of things that are happening, like, for example, right now.
And do you face challenges with that? Are you getting resistance?
So far, when I talk to them up to this stage, they are okay. Like, so far, I have known the parents of their friends, and we are getting along. Either one of us will drop them if they're going somewhere. But now that they're doing different activities, so it's not only the school, friends that they're going to have.
Yeah, but what are some of the challenges other parents are sharing with you? That maybe you have not gone through it, but it's there. What are some of these challenges?
Some of these challenges that I've seen here is, first of all, education. The children, for example, finishing grade 12, going to the university, finishing in their profession, and then ended up not getting a job in their field, struggling to, I would say, integrate into the system. Although they are either born here or they are brought here at a very younger age. I also hear from other parents, for example, the teens are being like rebellion, not listening. They don't want to go out to the community with their parents, like that type of resistance. Mm.
Mm-hmm. That's Stella Minga, a South Sudanese Canadian, sharing her experiences of working and living in Canada. She spoke with my colleague John Tanza in Kitchener, Waterloo. And that's our show for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Apero by Tufan and DJ Arafat.
That's it, friend.
Yes, kina pa marche.
That's it. Bororo rose. Bororo rose. Bororo rose. Il faut consommer. Voilà la musique qui consomme.
Papa Samuel Ateba.
Gweta Batsie.
DJ Eric.
Allez, maman, to, digi, digi, to. Tenge, nange, to. Tenge, nange, to. Tenge, nange, to. Eteme, tenge, nange, to. Maman, de bise, de tenge, nange, to. Tenge, nange, to. Tenge, nange, to. Tenge, nange, to. Maman, de bise, tenge, nange, to. Yeteme, yeteme, tenge, nange, to. Tuba. Wari do rose. Tupa na rafa te yoro. Voilà la musique qui bouge. Baby chocolat dansé, saya, tegere, saya, gogo, saga. Fili chena datine, bororo rido rose.
Lieutenant Colonel Becho,
bororo rido rose.
We've been listening to Tufan and DJ Arafat with the song Apero. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Thanks for listening, and join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Gervinho.
Panama, te kata la kabata mwe. Ma koma na kosa brada. Si didi manchi me fefele bunu munya mwe la.
Se ninja venga, Gabuchi.